Good morning. Today is Thursday, March the 9th. Joining us this morning, Humboldt County District Attorney Stacey Eads. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
You happy to be here?
So happy. Thank you.
I kind of sense that. Are you ready for your... Why do we say that?
Absolutely. Bring it on.
Frazzled. Why do we say frazzled?
Why did you choose this question?
It was either that or grandstanding.
Frazzled. All I can do is get rhymes in my mind. Frazzled, bedazzled. I don't know.
Okay, so it's a jewelry reference then, huh? Okay. Anytime you confess to being frazzled, you compare yourself to the frayed end of a rope. At least as early as the era in Britain was busily establishing the colonies in North America, sailors had special words for kinds and conditions of their all-important ropes. A length of rope that had seen considerable use, but could be repaired, was frayed. In many cases, damage went so far that a section had to be cut off before the shortened rope could be used again. Such a piece of disheveled rope was so much like the body and mind of an absolutely exhausted person that both came to be called frazzled.
Well, that kind of works. Huh? That works. I did have the visual of hair standing up and going every which direction, like the end of an overused rope. So, yeah.
So other than answering these trivia questions, what's been the biggest challenge so far?
I think probably like everyone and everything is time management and prioritization. So I think those are big challenges, just having many different interests and tasks coming my way and wanting to give everyone and everything the proper amount of attention. And so if I could just have a 48-hour day, I think we'd be good.
Or was it doppelganger? Isn't that what they... Yeah. I think that's probably one of the biggest things that anybody moving into a management or ownership position has, because there's always work. There's always challenges. There's always something else that can be done. What do your buddies say? Stop it? Work so long, have an alarm clock, go out. How do they manage the other department heads? Because they've got those same challenges also. Have they been able to provide any insight or suggestions that have been viable?
Well, I think... maybe just commiserating a little bit, but you know, it is the same challenge, and I think a lot of it just doesn't go away. It's just sort of with some new issues and some new information coming my way, and just some new duties and obligations, just sort of figuring out how those things fit. And as always, I think organization is key to good time management and prioritization. So, I think. People understand where it's coming from, and you do just sometimes have to cut things a little shorter than might be ideal.
And remembering where you left your notes.
Remember where you left your notes.
Yeah, I had that one this morning already. Organization, I think, is one of those challenges along with that, you know, to try to be more efficient. Are there pieces of equipment? You know, AI seems to be something that a lot of people are talking about now. Are there some of those tools that are out there that, if budget wasn't an issue, could help the department along those lines with better time management?
I think that certainly having the office fully staffed would be very helpful in terms of time management, but I wouldn't put that in the category of tools by any means. You know, and just trying to meet with staff and find out if there are things that we can bring into the office to improve the efficiency. I think certainly one of the things that we've been asking for a period of time is enhancement of the information technologies and just having a wider bandwidth so that we can exchange electronic data more efficiently and effectively. I think that would help in-house a great deal in terms of just processing the amount of electronic data and, you know, the information that we have to obtain from law enforcement agencies. So, for example, the body-worn camera, video footage. If you have any a call out to a scene and you have multiple officers respond, good thing. Each of them nowadays, most will have a body-worn camera rolling, and so we need to get that footage from each of the officers, and that's pretty voluminous. And so if we can make that a little more effective in terms of copying and transferring that from the law enforcement agency over to our office and then out to the defense attorneys if we file charges. So that would be very helpful in terms of increasing the efficiency and making good use of the time people spend in-house.
Does every case have, I don't want to say film, but let's call it film?
More often than not, yes.
So there's Absolutely. A lot of that coming through the system?
Sure. And it's not just limited to the, you know, officers' body-worn cameras, but lots of people nowadays have surveillance video. So that's pretty standard protocol. If there's a incident out on the street, you know, the officers will canvas the neighborhood and see if there are some neighbors that might have some video footage that they'd be willing to share to help us solve the crime or prosecute matters.
How much... talking to the cops, you know, you'll see the guys and they'll have their little cameras on them and we'll talk about it and stuff. I never thought about it at the receiving end, though. How much time does it take to go through that stuff to look for whatever it is that you're looking for? Is that hours and hours and hours, or do they give you a telescoped version of it? Or, I mean, that would seem like it could be a full-time job for somebody just sitting there watching cop films.
Yes, it can be, and it's something that we have to do in particular, you know, as we're preparing for evidentiary hearings, whether it's a preliminary hearing, for example, or the trial. Typically, the attorneys and or the investigators will review the entirety of the footage that's provided. And yes, it is hours and hours and hours.
And there's no commercial breaks. So
No commercial breaks.
Do you have the popcorn machine working? Perhaps not. Yeah, okay.
Depends.
Yeah, microwave popcorn. All right. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about chicken of the sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Stacey Eads, Humboldt County District Attorney. The video, I guess evidence would be what it would be classified as, is that maintained and held as much as other forms of physical evidence into the future if a case is not solved or you guys aren't ready to go and take it to trial? Is that part of the evidentiary holding stuff that goes on?
Absolutely.
Well, this is going to be a long show.
not much to add. You know, and it depends, like, on how far a particular case has gone and what, you know, so if it hasn't come to our office, in other words, the law enforcement agency hasn't concluded their investigation or they're not at the point where they think there's at least probable cause to file charges, then they might have their own retention policy based upon the type of crime. And it's not necessarily going to be retained into perpetuity.
Right. Your office doesn't get it until everything else comes through? Or is that part of the decision-making process that your folks will go through to determine whether or not to charge someone?
Well, ideally, all evidence would come our way that can be copied at the time that the referral with the request for charges and review. So that's not always possible, in particular with matters where the suspect has been brought into custody, because that triggers some really tight timelines. So in order for the so that we might rely more on the summary within the officer's narrative regarding his or her observations out in the field.
Other than the stuff that really isn't pertinent, is there anything that's off limits? I've been thinking like HIPAA. I mean, that triggers all kinds of stuff. Well, if this camera happens to be going, or there's an event, say at the hospital, and there's some medical forms that could be easily seen, does that get excluded or blurred out or whatever it is? Or is that just kind of included with everything?
If there's something that's questionable along those lines where it would be particularly invasive or it might trigger some sort of privilege, then that bit might be redacted. And then if it's something that still could be material and relevant, potentially exculpatory, we certainly would still have a duty to provide that to the defense attorney if charges are filed. So we would, in that instance, most likely go through the process where we'd request a judicial officer to review the materials and make a determination regarding whether they should be released to the defense. So are they material relevant, kind of do a balancing in terms of whatever the interest is in not releasing that particular information. So we would ask the court to make that determination. And then, you know, perhaps if the court does decide to release some or all of the material that might be privileged or fall into some sort of protected category, then the court may issue a protective order directing the parties, including the prosecution, in terms of how they can use that released material and limit it to that specific purpose for which the court's deemed that the matter should be released.
So you can have restricted use of certain evidence?
Based upon court order, sure.
Thou shalt and thou shalt not, kind of from the judge?
Right, yes.
Remember, you got to boil this stuff down for some of us.
So, yeah, so exactly. And so, you know, of course, then if someone fails to follow the court order, then there's potential contempt of court charges and sanctions that can be imposed. So a good example are our child abuse services team forensic videos of interviews that we might do of a child that is suspected to have been abused or may have witnessed a violent crime. So those types of materials we release always subject to the court's review and a court order protecting those materials so that they're not disseminated for purposes beyond the defense of the case from the defendant's side and prosecution of the case. So it's very limited. We don't want to have those materials released out into the general public for very obvious reasons. So that's a good example.
That goes to the judge. They make the determination, and then it goes to the defense, or everybody gets it at the same time but can't really access it or utilize it until the judge gives their blessing?
Generally speaking, because it's so standard and it's been litigated many years earlier, the cast forensic videos, those recordings are not released unless there's a protective order in place. So, that's the local practice. So the defense attorneys and the prosecution agree to, you know, use it for the purpose it's intended and only that. And then down the road, those materials are not supposed to be retained, but rather destroyed pursuant to the order. But, you know, it might have to be retained longer than what would be considered ideal from perhaps some folks' perspective because of appellate issues, and cases don't just end upon conviction and sentencing. So
that's what I was saying. So when some of these, I'll be nice, clowns come up for parole, if that stuff is gone, it would make it more challenging, wouldn't it, to argue your case why they shouldn't be released?
Sure.
Boy, saw about a 5-minute answer rendered to one word. That's
I got
bad.
Stuck with yeah. clowns. I wouldn't characterize it that way. So,
okay. Individuals, how's that?
Thank you. Yes.
All right. K-I-N-S.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Meet Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County DA Stacey Eads. Stacey, you had mentioned in the last segment about judicial officers and that there's a third-party review, I guess, would be what the, in effect, what that role would be for some of the video footage and I guess probably other evidence also and its admissibility and the, I guess, access for everybody to be able to use that information. Who is that person or that position? We're it's not a judge, but what is a judicial officer?
Oh, well, a judicial officer may be a judge. In the other example that we have here in Humboldt County would be a commissioner. So some, you know, the commissioner can make in here many of the same types of proceedings, but not all the same as a sworn judge. So and some of that depends on whether the parties to the matter stipulate to the commissioner hearing particular issues.
So there has to be an agreement that this individual is going to be involved in the process, or is it's not just normal procedure?
It just depends on what the issues are that are being presented. So I would say that would be very unlikely that the commissioner would be making determinations regarding the release of evidence in the criminal matters. That would be less likely. Our local commissioner does handle a number of matters, traffic court matters. We did have a early resolution court misdemeanor level offenses that the commissioner ran for a number of years. Some circumstances, juvenile proceedings. Judge Joyce Heinrichs was the commissioner for many years. She's now a judge. So
kind of lower level stuff. I know it's all relative. I got it, but
it's all important.
Yeah.
It just depends on. But so when I'm referring to judicial officers, I'm including the commissioner and the judge. But
okay, it's more of a function than it is rather than a position.
Sure. It's a broader category.
Okay. Freedom of Information Act. There was something in the news update talking about a whoops that happened. When that or those requests come in, obviously there's a line that they can't cross or that you're not able to provide or required to provide. Is that a constant spot, or does that fluctuate based on case by case or type of case by type of case?
So in terms of what we provide within cases, those are sort of pretty standard rules in terms of what we provide and reproduce for the defense. So typically, most everything that's in my file as the prosecutor should and would be in the file of the defense attorney. There are rare and few exceptions and materials that we might be privy to that the defense might not have access to. For example, if there was confidential information that triggered an investigation under certain circumstances. The identity of the informant may be not something that would be provided to the defense, and that's for safety reasons, really, for
protection.
Yeah. And so that's one example of a bit of information that the prosecution might have that the court would not release.
When the media, such as it is, get involved, or they're following a case and they're asking for information with an active case,
so
there's got to be limits on that also.
Sure. Yeah, there are limits. If it's an ongoing investigation, so that becomes there are exemptions in terms of what materials we can release. So if the integrity of the investigation or might, you know, put others at risk, those types of issues might balance in favor of not releasing the documents that might be requested by someone that's not directly involved in the particular matter, but that might have some other interest in terms of obtaining that information. We do, you know, receive a number of California Public Records Act requests that aren't always necessarily case specific, but might be more in terms of general production of, you know, statistics and how many of this type of case do you receive, and you know, so there's a number of exemptions that might apply, but certainly the benefits of transparency and keeping the public well informed in terms of what's happening within the district attorney's office and prosecution of crime within our community is a very top priority, and there's a strong public interest in that as well. So it's a balancing.
Statistical information, is that something that a lot of people get excited about? You hear the national statistics, and it seems like it gets used an awful lot for funding this and funding that. But is that something that has increased in the detail that you need to keep?
I think so. And in terms of what factors and what we look at, I mean, that sort of has changed over time. But I think that, you know, as folks want to delve into trends and, you know, trying to elicit information regarding whether things are being handled in a fair, uniform, consistent manner, I think that there's, again, a strong public interest in ensuring that fair justice is what's taking place in our community. So statistics can be a very powerful tool in looking at that and see if there's trends, you know, across the board and if there are any issues. And if so, you have to identify them before you can solve them. So, yeah.
So it's a management tool. But I would think that really wouldn't be something that would enter into a decision whether or not to go and charge someone or not charge someone based on statistical trends, and that it might trigger somebody getting excited because it was or because it wasn't charged. So is it just kind of tracked on the side, so to speak?
Well, we don't charge based upon whether it falls within a particular statistic or not, but we certainly do. Every case is evaluated on an individual basis. So what are the particular unique circumstances that present for that particular the crime that's been alleged, factors, anything that's aggravating and mitigating, who all is involved, any particular unique circumstances that might present along those lines. But at the same time, we do try to be consistent in terms of charging decisions as well as disposition decisions, and ultimately, you know, what we're arguing at the time of sentencing, to try to keep things fair and consistent. So although each case, you know, is unique and none are exactly the same, we do see some that are, have similarities in terms of the underlying conduct and factors that the particular victim, for example, what might bring forth in terms of, you know, their vulnerability, the challenges that a victim might have in terms of testifying and continued participation in the prosecution. So a lot of different factors, the severity of the crime, use of weapons from the defense perspective. So we try to be consistent and be fair in terms of how those cases are ultimately handled.
KINS, News and Information Time is 8:45.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time. It's 8:49. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County's DA, Stacey Aides. Stacey, case law changes, obviously, all the time. Legislation changes all the time. How difficult is it once you have these rules for evidence kind of in place and your protocols and your procedures? Do those have to change significantly on a regular basis also?
Those as in the, our policies and
yes,
of how
how you folks handle things based on legislation, based on case law.
Yes, of course. So, yeah, we have to and it keeps it interesting, right? So it's like there are always changes and so we have to stay up with it. And but, you know, the general practices typically are able to stay relatively the same because a lot of the the concepts and constitutional protections are the same, but and you see trends in terms of where things are proceeding. I think that communication and sharing of information, transparency, those are very important concepts, I think, within society at large, in terms of what's happening within government. And so I think that we see that as well within the office. So I think that, you know, since I began working as a prosecutor over 20 years ago, you know, my practice has been to share the information, because if you don't do that, how are you otherwise, you know, achieving justice? But again, like we spoke about earlier, sometimes there are other interests, you know, protection of an individual, safety, that might preclude our ability to share all the information. So
is, as you're in the middle of a case and the law changes, I know it sounds kind of goofy, but are you grandfathered in with what was acceptable at the beginning of the case? Let's say a new legislation at the state and it goes into effect January 1st. And you've got a case that's starting in the middle of December, and now it's January 2nd. Do you have to make those adjustments immediately, or because you're already in the process, so to speak, do you get a little bit of do the rules change on you, I guess, is the simplest way?
Well, it, you know, of course it depends on the particular rule and the particular law, but I think typically the safer course of action would be to try to be in compliance with whatever that new law, rule, or regulation might be and put into practice sooner rather than later. And we don't always know whether laws are going to apply retroactively or not. And so when there are significant changes, we usually get opinions from learned scholars regarding the likelihood of retroactive application or not, but
You made it.
You're kidding me.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
See you right tomorrow.